Turning your Bible this morning to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 1. This is something today we do not quite frequently, but we do occasionally. And rarely do I take the time to elaborate on what we're doing. We just have baby dedication Sundays every once in a while. The idea of much of religion when it comes to children is a theological term called covenant theology. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time with that this morning, but I want you to understand, especially if you're saved. I've had sometimes even saved people that are Bible believers, and they say, well, you know, this is like we did, and, you know, I was baptized as an infant. And the truth of the matter is you weren't baptized as an infant. If you were, you got wet and nothing else. Okay, there is no spiritual significance whatsoever in the baptizing of a child. And there is no holy impartation in that sense. There is nothing that makes the baby cleaner or purer, or it does not obliterate original sin. There is no need for a godfather or a godmother in that sense. Those are all religious inventions. And having said that, I don't mean to be cruel and unkind, but it seems as though sometimes we have a tendency to place those things on a pedestal when someone questions our walk with the Lord. When someone questions our spirituality, we tend to throw things like, well, I was baptized as an infant. Well, let me help you. That doesn't mean anything. And what we're doing this morning is not the Baptist form of that. And I want you to understand that going forward. We're going to look this morning a little bit in the Scripture and try to understand and obtain from the Scripture what the responsibility is between parents and children. I will confess this morning that much of my time, and probably most of my preaching anymore, is directed at the bracket of human beings that has most of my pity. And that's these young people. And it's not because they're less. They're not. Mentally, physically, they are far, probably further beyond where you and I ever would or ever will be. But my pity for this generation is they have no blueprint for life. No one has supplied them with a to-do list for success in life. This is a generation that have parents who have, whether through choice or necessity, have spent their lives as parents in the workplace with their children fending for themselves. The people who have imparted the values of most of our children today are peers or people in public school, and moms and dads have been completely innocent and absent in that sense. I don't, again, say that as an indictment. Let's admit that's the way it is. We don't have to like the way it is, and we don't have to approve of the way that it is. But I would be very remiss this morning if I did not state at the outset, to those who have chosen to spend as parents dual careers to provide for whatever it is that you have to provide for, I can promise you the day will come when you will no longer be employed in the workforce. And I will say with absolute positive certainty that if not now, then you will regret not spending the time with your kids rather than making money to live. We sometimes look back at the old days, and of course we can look back to England, pre-colonial days, and we would see there that, you know, there's a lot of poverty and all of those things. But I remind you, in those days and times, parents prioritized their family. A man went and got a job just to provide enough so his family could get by. He was not interested in gaining the riches of this world. As a matter of fact, because of the code of life that existed in England, there was no way he could ascend the ladder. He was born into a particular class, and he would never break that. Only on rare and remarkable occasions would he be breaking through that ceiling that was above him. He was mitigated to live his life at one level in life, and yet at that point he chose in that realm in which he lived to dedicate himself to his family. One has said in their histories that the American value of placing family as a priority is not a value that is shared around the world. It is a remarkable and it is a unique value in this country. And very much of it comes from our days associated with a colonial England or whatever. As our forefathers came to this country, they came not looking for a better job. They did not come looking for lots of money. They came to get their family to a place where when their children grew up, they could be proud and honored that they had done their best to raise their children. What we do today is a baby dedication. And that dedication is not necessarily a dedication of this child as much as it is a dedication of parents. Parents dedicating themselves to make their children a priority. A dedication not to be drawn away by the things of the world, but to place absolute value upon the children that God has given them. I look around this morning and I see a number of parents and even a few grandparents that grew up in this church and made their way through life in this church. I see some young people today that I honestly believe walk with the Lord and are faithful to the things of the Lord because they had an example in the lives of their parents and or their grandparents. And that causes me great joy. I think that perhaps there is no greater lasting joy in the ministry than to see those still walking with the Lord who represent several successive generations. I think if we're not careful, we place our values in gaining all the education, which there's nothing wrong with. We place our values in making as much money, there is nothing wrong with. But if we're not careful, we lay aside things that are of greater value in the long run, to obtain those things that appear to be of great value now, but at the end of life. I've never yet stood by and asked somebody for me to run down to the bank before they breathed their last breath and get all their money and bring it and put it in the bed around them. I've never had somebody ask me, would you call my banker and see how much money I'm making in interest? Never yet had that. But boy, I've been at the bedside of a number of saints of God who wanted their family around, who wanted their sons and their daughters and their grandchildren around. I submit to you that America is a country with misplaced values. We have placed things, we've placed ourselves, and to be honest with you, to place self and the desire to have riches and status in this world, the desire to own the top of the line and to have it in my possession, very often becomes a replacement for the true worth and value in life, and that is raising a family. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse number 19 is written in particular about a woman, a wife, who did not have children and who wished to have children. And in the course of 1 Samuel chapter 1, she comes before the man of God, and the man of God understands the plight through the beginning of the story that I'll not deal with this morning. But he says to her, after he discovers the need and the heart that is broken by this woman that could not have children, God's going to give you a child. And she immediately, when that takes place, says, well, I'm going to give him back to God. Now, she did not say that to get him out of her life. She did not say that because she had other endeavors and she wanted to be fulfilled herself. She wanted to be all that she could be, which didn't happen to none of that. She loved this child. As a matter of fact, you will see as you read the story, this child meant as much to her as anything else in the course of her life. And yet she chooses to do something with this child that is remarkable, and that is she puts that child in a place where God would be the center of every day's life for that child. I submit to you, she knew that if this child was to be successful, if this child was to have value in life, if this child's existence was to be remembered as a great existence, it would be because of his association with the things of God. She didn't seek to make him a race car driver or an athlete or a champion in some cause. She did not seek to give him an education that would make him stand out in any field whatsoever. She had a desire that this child would stand in the favor of God. And if that could be accomplished through her efforts, then she knew everything else would fall in place. The Bible said, if a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. You understand, when we neglect the raising of our children, when we neglect the upbringing of our children, seeking something else in life, and please, I say again, I don't want you to get me wrong, I'm not saying quit your job. But I'm saying when we put a priority in that over the lives of our children, we find at the end of that road is nothing but disappointment. 1 Samuel chapter 1 verse 19 says, "They rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord, and returned and came to their house to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son. And she called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. And Elkanah her husband said unto her, do what seemeth thee good. Tarry until thou have weaned him. Only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine, and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there." This story is remarkable in that you and I have nothing even to correlate in our own society with this. The idea we hear of women that will abandon their children, we hear of women that will pawn them off somewhere, but that is not this story. Now, this is not a story of a woman who had chosen other values in life and the child simply was in the way. Samuel was not an obstacle. Samuel was the answer of every prayer this woman had prayed. She had begged God. She had begged God in such a means that at one point she was accused of being drunken as she prayed, and people did not understand, and they thought, this crazy woman is inebriated here, and yet she was distressed because of what she did not and could not have. She longed for that child. She placed a value in children that our society seemingly does not have anymore. Children are just things that happen. And they happen in the course of life. And if we're really smart, we can make sure they don't dominate our life. And we can go on and climb to the top of the heap and make the good money and build the nice house and have the wonderful possessions and be upstanding in the community, at least until our children are grown. Did you ever look and see how many congressmen and senators have family members that are just a waste? Gave their lives to walk that path, to be elected, to schmooze with those necessary to schmooze with, to raise the funds, to get to the place where they could make a difference, and lose the ability to make a difference in the life of their children. Several of our nation's elite, if I were to call their names, you would know them, may know them anyway, have children that have committed suicide because of the emptiness of the life that they live. Wealth is there. Prestige is there. We would know their name. We would know their parent. And yet they chose to end their life. Can I tell you why? And I say that not to be indictful. They didn't have a mom or a dad. Because mom and dad were distracted and had placed values in other places and in other areas. I don't believe they did it intentionally. I think every parent has a natural love for that child. But I think the devil has a way of distracting us and saying that, boy, this is available, and if I work a little harder, I could get that, and if I try this, that might be. And all at once, we lose track of our children. As they crawl around at our feet, it's easy to look over the top of them and see so many other things. And sometimes I think the story of America in this day and in this time is the story of the lost children. The children that grow up without ever really feeling like somebody cares for them more than anything else in the world. A mom or a dad that cares for them more than a vocation or an opportunity or an election. A mom or dad that seeks continually to find out about the welfare of that child and how they're doing and where they're going and to help direct and guide that child, not so that they themselves as parents can climb to the top of the heap and count the immensity of their own riches, but perhaps they can raise a child that can have more than they had, but more importantly, a child who, having gained that, can still love his children or her children. We dedicate children to the Lord. It is not covenant theology. It is not pushing off on God parental responsibility. She brings this child down to the temple. And there Solomon begins a life of service to God in the temple of the children of Israel. She was not trying to push him away. She comes to visit. She comes to be with him. She cares for him. She prays for him as much as she prayed for his birth. She prays for his life. She chooses the people that are instrumental in the life of her child. We tend to shuffle our kids off to school, and truth be known, most of us know very little about the people that teach them. We send them off to school and we assume that the values that they are taught in a school will be the values that will match ours, but they aren't. And an entire generation has been taken away from their children, kidnapped, as it were, by those who seek to inculcate them with values that are not the values of their parents. We say, well, that's a horrible thing. It is, but may I say that this morning, that even that has no power. When that onslaught, when that attack is met by a child who has a mother and a father that love them and care for them and are instrumental in their upbringing, no teacher in the world can corrupt a child like that. The sadness is that many children grow up in homes with a mom and dad, but they don't have a mom and a dad. Not that's involved in their lives. Hannah, for whatever reason, understood that this child needed more than she could give. And as a result of that, it was not because I need him out of the way because I got an opportunity here to really make some money. I got an opportunity here to climb the ladder. I got an opportunity here to be with my friends. When she sent this young boy there, this young boy understood it was because his mother cared for him so much. She was willing to make that sacrifice so that he could be, because it was his life she was worried about, so that he could become, because it was what he would become that concerned her, of what he could achieve, because it was what he was going to achieve that was most important to her. She put him in those places with that understanding that there was a mother that loved and cared for a child enough to sacrifice the greatest thing she could sacrifice. As far as we know, the only thing she prayed for. The only answered prayer we know that she had. She was willing to part with that in order to see that that child's life would be profitable. I don't know that it ever profited her anything at all. Her child lived a number of miles away. She got to see him, I'm sure, on certain specific days when, as a family, they went up to worship. It was not a fanfare that came about going to see. It was just going to see my child, if he has time today, because he's awfully busy doing the things that's been instituted for him to do. Solomon raised his children, and after his children, he kind of sums up the process in Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way that he should go. And when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Many of us this morning would have to say we owe an allegiance to someone in our past. We are not here serving the Lord or here in church. And in honesty, we're not even saved necessarily because of ourselves, but because of others that had an involvement in our lives. We were trained up to follow the Lord. I trusted Christ as just a boy. I accepted him as my Savior. I was raised in church. I said before, I am Rick the Baptist, in case you haven't heard of me. You say, you've been brainwashed. Yes, I've been brainwashed, but my heart's been washed too. Because I had parents that were concerned that I be raised in an environment that could not necessarily profit them, but an environment that could please God. I submit to you, Hannah didn't leave this little boy at the temple for any self-interest. She left this little boy at the temple because she loved God. And she knew she could trust God when she couldn't trust others. Why do we do these things? Because we place a priority on children. We place a priority on babies and on infants. We place a priority on those little preschoolers. We place a value on those first and second graders that seem to live in a world all their own that no one has a map to find. We place high value on those third, fourth, fifth graders. We place value on high school students. We place a value on college and career. You say, why? Because the world is yet an opportunity for them. For most of us, our opportunities are still around, but they're not nearly as many as they used to be. They're not nearly as attractive as they used to be. And the truth of the matter is, most of us come to a place where we say, you know, it belongs to the young people. And yet sometimes when we say that, we do it without even realizing how we failed to prepare them for what is yet ahead. I look at our country and its values moving phenomenally quickly to a socialistic mindset. Some of us were alive to remember Vietnam and Korea and have family members that served in World War II. We know where that socialistic thing ends. And yet it seems like when we try to say that, young people just look like we're crazy. Young people, let me remind you, the greatest socialist in the last generation killed 6 million people in gas chambers. He laughed while he was doing it. He let some of them survive and told them they would not be put into the gas chambers if they played music while the others lost their lives. They buried them in mass graves with no recognition, no identification. Our own troops in this country spent months and months and months at the close of World War II digging up what remained of the rotting corpses buried sometimes 200 and 300 together. Never to know exactly who they were, whether there were any survivors of their family, what their life had been about, what had caused them to laugh, what had caused them to weep. How many children, knowing nothing about them. And somehow we live in a nation that is somehow ready to move in that direction. Ready to say it's time for us to make a change here. It's time for us, boy, our country has got problems and our country has trouble and it's time for us. Hey, listen, let me tell you about the situation you're about to adopt. It's already been proven to fail. And you're wanting to go back to it. But I don't blame that on you. Shame on us as parents. Shame on us for not thanking God for our country. Shame on us for not being as involved as we could have and should have been. Shame on us for just living the dream instead of teaching our children that the dream comes true when God is the basis of it. Genesis chapter 18. I do have my glasses on, they're just not working. God, speaking of Abraham, says this, listen to it. For I know him, that he will be a great entrepreneur. He has a college education with advanced degrees. He has a real spirit of innovativeness. Now, you know what God admired about Abraham? Listen to this. I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment. Notice, you don't get justice and you don't get judgment unless you do it under the Lord's dominion. That the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. Only he says, take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligent, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen. The truth of the matter is, we're commended in Scripture to raise our families under the same mandate that God has given. The same thing God saw in Abraham, he ought to be able to see in us as moms and dads. The same thing that caused God to say, hey, Abraham will not go childless. I will not allow that. Here's an individual that I will give seed to. Here's an individual that I will trust with children because he has the right perspective. God never one time looked to see how much money he had. Hey, let me let you in on a little secret. God controls all the money. I just want you to know that tonight. It's not the banks. It's not your IRA. It's not any of that. God controls the money. Okay? You say, well, I choose not to believe that. Then go ahead and spend your life scrimping and scraping, trying to put it together and see how that works out for you. Why in the world would you want to live like a pauper for 60 years so you could retire as a king? I submit to you, life is good when you follow the Lord. It's good when you're 15. It's good when you're 20. It's good when you're 25. It's good when you got three little rugrats running around in a house trying to pay the rent. It's good. It's good. It's good. Not because you got $1,000,000,200,000,000,000 in the bank, because God is there to take care and provide. We don't need the wealth. The world's held the carrot in front of you so long. You think I got to have it. I've preached a lot of funerals in my life. I have never once been asked to give a financial report. Nobody's ever asked me, preacher, when you speak about him, could you talk about how much money he saved? Could you talk about how wise he was in his IRA investments? Could you tell about, no, you know what? Tell about how good a dad, talk about how good a mom she was. Tell about how we used to go on vacations together when we didn't have the money and we had to sleep in the car, but we enjoyed the time together. I submit to you that you can make all the money in the world and live in the highest rent district anywhere in this country, but there'll come a day when you realize the value is in family and nothing compares to that. You say, well, I didn't have a family, and there's where my heart is heavy. Because I believe there are a lot of teenagers growing up in homes today that have no family. The only family they have is the guy on the screen that has the gun that can kill the other guy that's around the corner hiding behind the wall that I can see because I got these magic goggles on. And my whole life is about conquest of something that doesn't exist. Psalm 78 verse 3 says, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. The psalmist said, it's not important what my life is about. It's not important about what my champion causes were. It's not about what I've obtained. It's about what the Lord's done for me. And my children need to realize what the Lord's done for me. And that's the key to success. Because what the Lord's done for me, it'll do for them. My father got saved when I was 2. My father nearly burned to death just before he got saved. My father was a cocky, arrogant GI. I guess that's what he would have said. Maybe not. If he wouldn't have, he'll whip me when I get to heaven. And just imagine in my mind from some of the things he did say. And he was innovative. He was a hard worker. Always knew that. And he was lost. And he was good at being lost. He was not a despicable human being. He was a good old boy. Do anything for you in the world. I believe that about him. Everybody liked him. Believe that about him. But he had some folks over one evening to impress him. He had built by hand a brand new two-car garage back in the 50s and built it himself. And wanted to celebrate, brought some friends over, and was going to grill some steaks and, you know, have a little bit to enjoy. And in that process, it was a windy day, as I was told, and without having the grills that have gas and burners, and you had to take charcoal briquettes, and you couldn't get charcoal that had been pre-treated. How many of you remember those days? You had to just use a book of matches and pray with every match. Let it burn, let it burn, let it burn. And it was one of those typical days where it would start and then it would go out, and then you'd light it again and it would go out. And for whatever reason, my father, who was pretty intelligent, decided that just a little jar of gasoline would probably help getting that fire going. You've already gotten ahead of me in the story. My father became a candle. As he threw that gasoline onto that fire, it traced all the way back to that container. And when he tried to get rid of it, it was stuck to his hand because of the intensity of the heat. And he threw gasoline all over himself. And he ran from the garage out into the backyard. And all of that stuff, finally a fellow from up on the hill from where we lived came running down and took a blanket and put the fire out. And all I remember about that is nothing. I'm telling you what I heard as I grew up. But I remember him distinctly saying, the only thing that I remember with absolute clarity was when I turned around and realized I was burning. And I saw my 2-year-old son standing right behind me. And I realized that I could do nothing for him. And he said, when I ran from that garage, my only prayer was, God, don't let my son burn to death. Why would you tell him? Well, I tell you that because it was just a few weeks later, in a cast or a body gauze from the waist all the way up to the top of his neck with his arms wrapped, he walked the aisle and trusted Christ as his Savior. He had been raised in church, but it had little effect, I suppose. But that night he got saved. You say, well, you know, that was just... Well, let me finish the story. Strangely enough, a few weeks later, they took all the bandages off, and there was not one scar left. Which the doctor said, I don't understand this. And so I watched that father grow up and set an example for his sons to follow. He did not push us to achieve this or that. Be careful, parents, about trying to make your children become the answer to your dreams. My father did not push us to play sports. He did not push us to do this or that or the other thing. He did not have a mold. But I heard him say again and again and again, trust the Lord and the Lord will lead you in the right direction. This lady brought this little boy to the temple and she said, I'm going to lend him to you, God. Why? Well, because I don't love him. He's in the way. He's holding me back from what I need to achieve. And I mean, I have me problems I need to take. No, she said, he's the only thing in my life that matters this much to me. I prayed for this child. I begged God for this child. His coming into this world was an answer to every heart feeling that I had. When I held him in my arms, I knew that this was the best life had to offer. I'm not giving him to get anything. I'm giving him because I love the God that gave him. And if God loved me enough to give him to me, then God loves me and him both more than we could ever understand. And so she brought that little boy and put him at the feet of the man of God. He was there, he was raised. He became the great priest that anointed first Saul and then David to reign over the nation of Israel. The great prophet, the great man of God, he would become the great Samuel. At one time, there were more people in the world named Samuel or after a derivative of Samuel's name than any other name. It's an amazing thing. We don't name our children very often after people of ill repute. We don't name, you know, this is Al Capone, whatever it is, you know. This is Ted Bundy, whatever. That's, you know, we don't have a tendency. This is little Adolf. Adolf, go get Benito and bring them in here. And we don't live that way. We name our children after people we respect and we love and we honor. She names this little boy, and for all those years beyond, people have been honored to name their children Samuel. Still a fine name in this day of transitioning names. Samuel. A name that resonates confidence, dependability. Samuel. You say, well, I know a Sam. Well, maybe you do. But the reason Sam that you know is named Sam is not because of the Sam that he is, but of the Sam that was. In high hopes that he could live up to his namesake. Why do we do what we do? Well, we do what we do because God gives us the opportunity and the commandment to train them. Very quickly this morning, write these things down and I'm going to be done. Some things that every mom and every dad need to do for their children. Now, let me say, I'm not going to go back and re-preach the first part of the message, but before you get here, you've got to make your children a priority. You say, well, what about me? What about you? Let me help you. You're not nearly as important as you think you are. You're not nearly as dashing and beautiful as you believe yourself to be, okay? Truth of the matter is, nobody here this morning is grade A prime, okay? We all would fit in somebody's reject line. You say, well, people love me. I bet you not many. Not nearly as many as you think. Why would you say that? Because I just need to bring us down a little bit. We've watched too much television. Unlock the real you. No, keep that rascal locked up. Only God knows what would happen if you let that rascal out of that cage. We're not nearly the people we think in our mind. We're all legends in our own mind. But there's more to it than that. There is the ability to take what little I have and to give that to one who's about to go out into the world. To give them a little bit of an advantage. You say, why? Because they're no prize either. All flesh is as grass. That's what God said. It's just like grass. When it grows too fast, it gets ugly and weeds fill. It's just like that's the way we are. Here's some things I need to see to it. Number one, we need to teach these children limits. Write it down. L-I-M-I-T-S. Limits. You say, what is that? Limits. We're not teaching children limits. You say, well, you can go anywhere you want to go and be anything you... No, no, no. Don't lie to that child. Listen, kid. The way you look and the parents you got, you'd be lucky to make it to first base. You say, well, I don't believe in telling children that. Well, I'm not saying to be that drastic, but I'll tell you what. It is just as disgraceful to tell a child that you're going to climb the ladder. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You make sure you spend 15 years in college and you'll come. And they may not come out. They may die of a drug overdose like about 30% of them do. Quit making promises you're not certain of. Be real. But teach that child that they have limits. What does that mean? Well, number one, it means they need to impose limits on themselves. It's quiet now. This is, you know, things go faster if I get a lot of amens and hallelujahs. And if somebody run an aisle, I might miss 2 or 3 points right here. Teach a child that it has limits. You don't do that. You can't do that. That is not allowed. Oh, but I want my child's personality to develop. Well, just call him Al then, because Al Capone is being raised. You know, the only thing that keep people, you know, I understand what's involved in robbing a bank. The logistics, I got it down. I could do it. No problem. Matter of fact, I'm convinced I'm probably smarter than half the guys that try to rob banks. You say, why don't you do it? Because I was taught you don't do that. That's a no on the horizon. That crosses the line between respectability and disrespectability. Somebody taught me one day. You know how they taught me that? When I took my brother's toys and they made me give them back. We don't do that here. When I was in the nursery and they said, no, we don't take toys from other children. You say, oh, that's just horrible. I think they just need to, listen, you're raising a Hitler and you don't know it. Put a chokehold on that little rascal. Teach them limits. Teach them limits. I could spend it all day there, but I won't. Teach them not only to impose limits in their own life. You don't want to know why most kids will sit around and watch 10 hours a day with video games? Because they don't have any respect for limits. Hey, you don't want to play a video game? There's a couple I think I could, you know, I could get Dr. Mario to do something every once in a while. But 12 and 15 hours and impose some limits, young people, on yourself. You want to know why you have a hard time studying? You don't have the ability to impose some limits. There's always something I'd rather do than study. There's always something I'd rather do than get that term paper done. There's always something that's much more glamorous. Impose some limits in your own life. But let me say, secondly, honor limits that have been set. Other people may have some limits. Society may have some limits. Honor those limits. Understand that limits were not put there somehow to keep you from feeling free, to keep you from... No, they're not there to keep you limited. They're to keep society limited so it doesn't destroy itself. Moms and dads, if you didn't get anything else, I hope you wrote that down. A parent's responsibility is to teach a child to have and respect limits in life. Number two, teach them the value of learning. Teach them the value of learning. And real learning is only acquired through listening. Teach them to listen. Dads, take that young guy, take that young girl. Moms, take that little boy, take that little girl and say, listen, here's what we're going to do. Watch what happens here. Isn't this neat? Isn't this, make it, make it the joy that it was to you the first time you discovered it. Teach that child to listen and to learn. Teach that child to love. That's the job of a parent. Don't sit back and say, well, one of these days you're going to meet some... No, you better start preparing them today for one of these days. Okay? You say, why? Because for most kids, the first guy they run into, the first gal they run into is the first gal or the first guy they run into. They have no playbook. They have no understanding. And so they ruin their lives. We're at a threshold where most kids are not raised by their own parents anymore. You say, well, it just didn't work out for me. Well, then you're not half the woman or half the man my parents were. You couldn't hold a candle to those people. Well, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. They had problems just like you had. They had forces at work against them just like you do. They had opportunities just like you do. The difference is they understood that. Let's get back to those limits. They understood that life and love worked on a little different frequency than most people assume. Love is about being there. Love is about compassion. Love is about help. Love is about humility. And love is about sacrifice. Love is about sacrifice. I watched my mom go through the routine of being a housewife. I didn't know then it was that boring. I had to grow up and watch women in modern day society to understand. My mom actually acted like she enjoyed cooking. I understand. Evidently, nobody, she didn't have a TV to tell her, I guess. She enjoyed cooking and she enjoyed sitting down on the floor and talking with her boys and playing whatever game it might be. My mom had a playful spirit. My mom had a stern countenance, though. And boy, when you crossed the line, you knew to pull your head inside the shell. What are you saying? I'm saying my mom loved in a way that didn't just let us go any way we wanted to go. My mom didn't say, I love you, no matter what you become. My mom said, I love you, and I'm going to tell you, as one who loves you, the best course of action for your life. That's a completely different idea than is fostered today on children. I love you, go live your life any way you want to live it. And then blame society when your kid finds out it didn't have a mother or it didn't have a father. You say, that's pretty rough. Change your life, and it doesn't have to be. My brother and I could be anywhere within a 2-block radius of my house, and we would hear about 7 o'clock at night, if it was in the summertime, Ricky and Ronnie, only at 244 decibels. She didn't say anything else. She didn't say, where are you? She just, when we heard Ricky and Ronnie, we knew we had about 8 seconds. And we headed home. You say, boy, how did... She trained us. She taught us. She loved us. She cared for us. She was mom. Nobody like her. Parents, be a mom. Be a dad. It's not about you. It's not about what you achieve. One of these days, you'll understand when you look through those eyes at what you've produced. When you can say, thank God. God's been good to me. Thank God I have raised a child and they're doing well. Thank God I have a child that is in love with God. Thank God that God's done the... You'll never be able to take the credit because you'll always know what you were worthy of. But if you raise them right, they'll do you proud. Teach them to have limits. Teach them to learn by listening. Teach them to love generally for everybody. I don't dislike anybody. I think some people look really squirrely. I think some people act really bizarre. But I understand the world today would say, well, that's because you're prejudiced, you hate people. Listen, I don't hate anybody. I'll give everybody a chance, and I'll give them my respect and my love. And if they want it, I'll continue to give it. If they don't, I'll go somewhere else. But I'll always give it. Teach them to love. Teach them to love their spouse. Teach them to love their country. Teach them to love God. Teach them to love their fellow man. You say, well, preacher, that's just all the old stuff from the... I'll tell you why this country is as great as it is. Okay? It was not because of academia. I just want you to understand that. Go back and look at the early institutions of academics, and you'll find that 99.9% of all the academic institutions in the United States for the first 100 years were religious institutions. Princeton was a Bible college. Harvard as well. All of the Ivy League schools were organized for the propagation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And our country did reasonably well then. But we've transitioned now, and it's not about God anymore. It's about me. Teach them to labor. Teach them to work. I understand that we live in a world now that's going to be techno, and everybody's going to sit behind a desk. But I'm going to help you with that. When all the computers fry and all the chips aren't working, everybody's going to still need somebody to cut their grass. You say, well, how much does that pay? When ain't nobody else doing it, you can charge whatever you want to charge. And if they're a techno geek, charge them $50 an hour, man. They got it. They got it. Take them for a ride. Say, why would I do that? Show them they're not as smart as they thought they were. Learn how to do something. Learn how to make a living. I'm not saying that you spend the rest of your life cutting grass. But I'm saying you ought to know how to work. I'm going to tell you something. If I woke up in the morning without a dime in my pocket, I know how to get a cup of coffee and a meal. And I wouldn't steal it. I know how to earn that much money. I know how to earn that much money in less than an hour. You say, what? What would you do? I'd do anything that needed to be doing. I went to school with a guy that didn't have enough money to pay his school bill, and he went to the store and he bought a bucket and he bought a squeegee and he started down the road knocking on doors and he said, hey, can I wash your windows? I'll wash your windows in your house. When he left that school, he was the top one window washing guy in the city. Well, you see, it can't be, because nobody ever taught you that it could be done. We had a young man here years ago at Bible Institute, and they all complain because we have evening classes, and they say, well, how can we pay our school bill? And I said, well, get out and just get a job, be an entrepreneur. Well, what can I do? I said, you can cut grass. When he left, he sold his equipment and made a pretty handsome profit, worked his way through school. Most of you know who he was. You say, I'm just saying this. Teach a child the value of labor and of being innovative, and recognize that you don't have to just live, throw your hands up and say, oh, it's just the world that hates me. It will not understand my hidden and latent potentiality. They just will not let me be. What a shut up and get a job. You say, well, I want to climb the heights. Well, listen, save enough money to buy a ladder first. It's indispensable to teach a child some things in life. I don't mean to be caustic. I just think that sometimes we don't hear what we're being told. We rush out and turn on the news media, or we watch the TV and we say, oh boy, it's good to be back to normal. And there is nothing more abnormal than what you're paying attention to. I believe we pay the price for the life that we live very often in the lives of our children. As a passage that said, her children shall arise and call her blessed. And I submit to you, a parent that does the job correctly, that does the job along God-ordained parameters, will have a child that will grow up and love its parents. No matter where they are, no matter what becomes of them, they will have a love for their parents. We dedicate children. That's what we're going to do this morning in just a minute. But it's not so they get into heaven, because we can't do that. That's a personal choice. We dedicate parents today to the prospect as they hold these little children in their arms. Do you realize where that little child ends up is at the determination of their parents? And that's what we want them to understand. That being here today is not some hocus pocus that a preacher puts on you and your child. It's not a guarantee that your child will become a great leader in our country. It's simply a reestablishment of the idea that God gave this child to you, Mom, and to you, Dad. And He could have given this child to anybody else on the face of this earth, but He gave this child to you so you can do the job. And you can raise a child that at some point you will look at and say, thank God. I didn't know what I was doing was going to produce what it produced. But God somehow got involved in that. God somehow honored my weaknesses. God somehow made up for my deficiencies. God somehow got involved in the lives of my children like He was involved in my life, and the result of it is a happy life. I preached my grandfather's funeral. I preached my father's funeral. I was able to tell everybody they were saved and loved the Lord, men who were respected in their community and in their field, but men who had an impact in the life I live. I hope someday when somebody preaches my funeral, they'll be able to say, this was a good man. You say, well, life's not over till it's over. I hope they'll be able to say that. And if they're able to say that, rest assured, it's not because of the guy laying in the casket. It's because of the parents and the grandparents and the great-grandparents that lived life the way it was intended to be lived, that walked in the parameters that God had ordained, that never were millionaires, but we always had enough, and we always had laughter. And we always enjoyed one another. let it be said at that point that a life is not just the result of a birth date to a death date, but the result of a grandparent or a mom or a dad or a family, and then a death date. And that death date only signifies the value of all that came before.